This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent, match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
All things are great in Cleveland. It's groovy. Who doesn't love 3-11? We're going to love 3-11 with our next guest of the MMQB. He joins us every single Tuesday. The great Albert Breer joins us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Welcome back to the show, buddy.
That was kind of uplifting. You guys are excited about 3-11, huh?
I'll be honest with you. I love it better than 11-3.
Yeah, it can, honestly, having covered all sorts of teams, it can sometimes be more interesting, believe it or not.
Oh no, he was being sarcastic,
yeah,
Albert. No, this has been miserable.
Yeah, No,
I'm not kidding. Like, it can be more interesting sometimes.
You spent a lot of time in the Boston area.
Because there's boring 3-11, and then there's 3-11 where there's a lot of stuff going on. I don't know where the Browns. I'd say the Browns are probably somewhere in the middle of that right now.
I know that the reports are, and you've reported previously, barring something, I think the word catastrophic is what you said with us, that Barry and Stefanski are coming back here. And by the way, that this is we certainly believe that reporting. But as we have these conversations just amongst ourselves, there were a couple things I wanted to peek back to with the Watson trade, if you want to go in the DeLorean with me. Is that okay?
Uh-huh.
All right. Did Kevin Stefanski have a say in moving on from Baker Mayfield?
Yeah, I think he did. If you want to get in the DeLorean on this one, here's what I think their dilemma was. I think they liked Baker. I don't know if they liked Baker at $55 million or $50 million or $45 million or whatever it would have cost at the time. And so, I think you can sort of look at it if you're the Browns and you say, okay, we like our quarterback, but if we pay him that much, we're asking him to make up for X number of players that we won't have on our team anymore. And can he be that good? And I think the example of what that good means you're seeing in Buffalo and in Kansas City now, right? Where the singular player is good enough where, when they're turning over the roster, he can make it look like nothing. He can make it look like there's no sort of retooling going on, right? And so, okay, so if you decide, he's good, and he may be $25 million good, but he's not $50 million good, well, then what's the solution? It's either you go back into the draft and you draft another one and you hope you hit, or you find somebody that you think is worth that price point. And so I think that's sort of what it was, and I've used this analogy with you guys in the past, right? It's like that club in the AFC right now, and I would say – the teams in that club are the Chiefs, the Bills, the Bengals, the Ravens, the Texans, I think, are have a chance to get there. Maybe not there yet. The Chargers right on the borderline. But that's who you're going to have to compete against, you know, like teams that have that level of quarterback. And, you know, for the foreseeable future, you're going to have to beat three of those teams in succession to compete for a Super Bowl, right? So is your quarterback good enough where you can compete at that level and take a little bit less on your roster so you because you know, like, the quarterback is good enough to make up for it. And, like, that, I think, is what Deshaun Watson was to them. And I think that's what Deshaun Watson was to Houston. In fact, I think you could even see the way Deshaun played in 2020 when they were really bad around him. Like, he – like and they fired their coach in season and all that different stuff. He was still really, really good. So, you know, I think what the Browns saw was an opportunity to go and get a guy who was going to get them behind the velvet rope and into that club. And a guy who was going to be worth the price point of a premium quarterback when they didn't think Baker was quite there. Now, you know, we can look back at it now, and obviously it's been a disastrous decision, but I think that line of thinking is something that pretty much everybody in the organization was in on. Everybody with any sort of decision-making sway anyway.
So this, I think you might have just answered it. So the basically, when we have the Kevin conversation, one of the Kevin kind of gets a pass for whatever happened with Baker, and not just the Deshaun trade, but that there's nothing Kevin could have done differently with Deshaun. So I think I know what your answer is going to be, but Kevin did have a definitive say in Deshaun coming here as well, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I know everybody really liked him as a player. Now, you know, the off-field stuff, so obviously, you know, what you had to sort through at the time. But, look, if we're going to do the revisionist history stuff with them, let's do it with ourselves, too. Like, how good did you think Deshaun Watson was at the end in Houston?
I thought he was MVP candidate.
Right. Like, mm-hmm. So, and I don't think you were wrong to think that. I thought that, too, you know, so... He has not been the same guy. And, you know, like, however you want to explain that, couch it, whatever, he simply has not been the same guy. And, you know, right down to, like, I think his personality around the team has been different than what his personality around the team was in Houston, you know? Again, like, as a gamble you took, and the risk you thought was, like, okay, like, this off-field stuff is going to wind up crushing him. I don't know that you thought it would crush him in the way it did, though. You know, which is, I think, sort of, I don't know, like, I think he's been, like, I think he's a little more reclusive than he used to be. Not that he was ever the loudest, most outgoing guy, but I think he's more reclusive than he used to be, like, a little less engaged with his teammates than he used to be. And, you know, and certainly he does not look like the player he was before.
Albert, today the Browns, they went out with the idea that DTR is going to be the quarterback now. Now, what does that mean for Jameis and the Browns in the future? It seems like a really hard idea that you could go to DTR and have him be the quarterback and then be like, but Jameis is going to be the guy next year because he gives you a chance to win games. That just doesn't compute to me.
Yeah, I don't think it's – I mean, I think at this point it's like if you're the Browns, you're in like evaluation mode. You know what I mean? You're looking at – the players in your roster and how they, you know, how each player fits into next year's plans. And you're trying to get as much of a read as you possibly can on as many guys as you possibly can. And so I think that that's probably more than anything else was behind the move. And, you know, I don't think Jameis is the guy that'll be sitting next to Deshaun Watson in the quarterback room next year. I think whoever it is, whether it's a draft pick or a veteran, you know, whether it's Justin Fields or someone they get in the top 10 in the draft, someone, whoever it is, I think it's going to come in to take Deshaun Watson's job. And I think it's going to be at that point up to Deshaun Watson to fight that person off, you know? You know, the people I've talked to, you know, like inside the organization, I think they know they're sort of resigned to having Deshaun on the roster in 2025. And I think the best thing they think they can do is add competition to the room. And that's a lot different, by the way, than the approach the last few years. I mean, you guys know as well as I do, there's a reason Joe Flacco isn't on the team anymore. And there's a reason why, you know, they replaced him with Jameis Winston. And, you know, so much of what they've done in building that room out the last few years has been like in an effort to try to lift Deshaun Watson up and make him feel comfortable. My sense is that that's over with now. Like, it's not going to be about making him comfortable anymore. It's going to be about trying to create some level of competition in the room where they can get the best quarterback play out of the room, regardless if it's Deshaun Watson or someone else starting next year.
Albert, my co-host, and I think correctly so, believes it doesn't matter if it's DTR, Jameis, or Bailey Zappi, the final three games, the Browns are going to go 3-14.
Is Bailey Zappi there? I didn't even realize
that. That's our guy.
Yep.
Yeah, there you go.
Just wait.
I got to tell you guys more about Zappi fever up here in New England. It spelled the end of Mac Jones.
We remember the big game against the Browns. He threw for like 400 yards. He was a great for that.
We're one bad DTR game away from Zappi fever here.
There were some great stories from Zappi fever. I mean, at one point, he and Mac Jones didn't get along to the point where I believe Bailey was watching tape in the receiver room rather than the quarterback room. So it was a special time in Patriots history.
That's a real Brian Hoyer, Johnny Manziel situation you got going on there. So he believes for the final three games, fatalistic. It doesn't matter who plays quarterback. I've started thinking about next year. I hear Browns fans like, if we just get Sam Darnold, it's going to change the game. Mm-hmm. If we just get Cam Ward, we're going to be right back to being in the playoffs. I think as it pertains to being a playoff team, I don't think there's a quarterback out there that gets you back to where you were supposed to be this year or close to it. Am I being too fatalistic?
Why not, though?
Because I don't think it's just – I think you need to rebuild the defensive line, the offensive line, need a new running back, probably need to swap out a couple players on defense. I don't think it's just a quarterback.
Yeah, I think you're closer than you think. Like, I think – I still think, like – I mean, look, like, the offensive line injury issues got you again. I think you can let Jed Wills go and feel like relatively comfortable with DeJuan Jones as your left tackle next year and maybe draft somebody to compete with him. You know, outside of that, I think you could be okay on the offensive line if you just kind of create a little competition there at that left tackle spot. I think like outside of that, like, look, like they have the big things taken care of. You know what I mean? Like they have a guy who looks like he's got a real shot to be a number one receiver in Jerry Jeudy and how he's played of late. They have Denzel Ward as the number one corner. They have Myles Garrett as their edge rusher. And I just like look at where they are from a roster standpoint. And it's like, they sort of, I don't know if you guys would agree with this. I think they've got like a lot of the hard stuff taken care of, you know? So now it's about going and finding the $5 million signing to fill a hole and hitting on the third round pick, who can eat up snaps for you somewhere on defense like that. Those are the sorts of things they're looking for. I don't like really view it as like the Browns are sitting here in a position where like, okay, like we have to overhaul key positions. The tackle thing on offense is a big one for sure. You know, but outside of that, like, the obvious elephant in the room, the quarterback position, you know, I do think like they've got the basis of a team that can contend next year.
Albert, Nick Chubb broke his foot this past weekend. His season is done. What do you think happens with Nick Chubb for the rest of his career and even as it pertains to the Browns?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of sad, isn't it, guys? I mean, I loved seeing him score the touchdown there on that Thursday night. And, you know, obviously he's meant a lot to the franchise. So I would hope that, like, if he's going to play next year, that they can find a way to work out something that works for everybody where he's playing in Cleveland. But I think it's pretty clear he's not the same guy anymore, you know? And If he decides that this is it, and you know, based on what he's been through from an injury standpoint, going all the way back to college, like he'd certainly understand if this is it for him. I think he has nothing to be ashamed of, and it sucks going out like that. But you know, sometimes it's just the way it works out. And if he does want to come back next year, I would love to see it happen in a Browns uniform because I do think he deserves that. You know what I mean? Like. That doesn't mean he deserves $10 million or whatever that number might be that you might want if you had his resume. But like he does deserve at least the opportunity to come back and finish his career with the Browns if he wants to, at whatever that price point might be.
Albert, we got plenty to get to, not just here in Cleveland, but around the NFL. But I just want to circle back to our DeLorean in a minute, for just 1 minute. Does Kevin bear any responsibility for Deshaun's failure to...
I'm Tank Sinatra.
And I'm Investigator Slater.
And together we co-host a podcast called Psychopedia, which is a true crime podcast infused with comedy, making it a crimedy. Each week, Investigator Slater brings us a wild and thoroughly researched true crime case. I'm here to digest it all and react just like you probably are, right there on the other side of the microphone.
Somehow, I've got to present each case with the detail and respect it deserves, while also cracking up at Tank's perfectly timed humor and thought-provoking questions.
Listen to and follow Psychopedia on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
To play well, whatever, in Cleveland.
I mean, yeah, they all do. I think everybody has. I use the term everybody has blood in their hands. Like, I think ownership does. I think the front office does. I think the coaches do. Like,
what's Kevin's blood?
I think to some degree, well, with Kevin, I think it's like, you know, part of it is, did you do the most to get the most out of him? And I think they tried. I would stop short of saying they did everything that they could, and I think they were on the way there this year. But I think one thing that, like, you know, you hear pretty consistently from people who are with him in Houston is that they brought in, like, a big chunk of what was the Clemson offense and integrated it into what Bill O'Brien does to try to get him going when he was a young player. So did you do enough of that? I'm not sure that they did. And the other thing is, like, they were able to reach him in Houston because they built trust with him. And they coached him really hard. And I don't know if he was coached hard the same way in Cleveland that he was in Houston. Now, maybe it was impossible to do that because I think coming out of everything that he went through, obviously a lot of it self-inflicted. Like, he was a little bit of a different guy. And maybe he was going to be less receptive to that. But that was something that really worked with him there, you know, is how hard they were on him. So, like, I think if you point at Kevin, you can say, okay, like, did you do enough schematically to make it work? And did you do enough to reach him? Again, I think most people would tell you he wasn't the same guy in Cleveland the last couple of years that he had been in Houston.
Albert, Brown's taking on the Bengals this weekend, and it feels like for the fourth week in a row, we saw Joe Burrow just kind of lose it either on Zach Taylor or somebody else when the cameras were on him. It's to the point where I'm convinced it's intentional. Do you feel that way as well, or do you think this is just all coincidence that we're catching a Joe Burrow outburst each week?
I think he's frustrated. I think he's really, really frustrated. And I think, like, I would say that, like, I don't think it's an act. I think it's genuine. This is a guy who I think is, like, as close a descendant to Brady as you're going to get in the league. Like, just as far as his competitiveness and, like, stylistically the type of player he is, how much he cares, all that different stuff. And, you know, I think it's frustrating for him because, I think he's done a lot to kind of change the face of the Bengals the last few years, right? Like, and I think he's been at the forefront of that and kind of helping to flip the identity of the team. And, you know, here they are, and he did everything he did to come back off the wrist injury. And it, you know, feels like there's, like, some same old Bengals things happening where spending costs them in some areas and they haven't developed players in other areas. So I think there's some frustration with that for sure. And I think if you're the Bengals, you have to be really careful now, you know, like, not to piss this guy off to the point where it's a real problem for you in a year or two where, like, maybe he doesn't want to be there anymore, you know? So If I'm the Bengals, I'm going to him at the end of the season. And I'm like, listen, like, you're a partner with us in this. We want to collaborate with you on a lot of stuff. And, like, anything you think that we need to help you, be at the highest level and help us win championships, we'll always listen. You know, I just, if I were the Bengals, I'd be very, very careful. It's, like I said, like, winning is very important to him. And I don't think he's going to sit around forever and let the things that have cost the Bengals in the past cost them again.
All right, Albert, we got about 30 seconds. Should Bears fans be concerned that the Bears have already ruined Caleb Williams?
I mean, like, look, like, these things can flip fast, right? I think you were talking about Jared Goff that way after year one in L.A. and they bring in Sean McVay and everything changes. I don't think the story's written yet. I think it does underscore the importance of getting it right. Not just getting it right at quarterback, but getting it right at a lot of different levels. Like, that organization doesn't want a playoff game in 15 years. They've been wayward. They don't really have an identity anymore, feels like. And so, you know, I think getting the organization aligned is job number one. I don't think it's just developing one player, but putting Caleb Williams in a healthy environment, I think it starts with that, and then finding the right coaches to work with him and build a scheme for him. I think it certainly shows you the amount of pressure there is on a lot of people in that building to get the next set of hires right.
Albert, we got a boogie, buddy, but want to say happy holidays to you and your family. Appreciate what you do for us all year long. So thanks again, bud.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to all of you guys, and go Bucks.
Go Bucks. Albert Breer there on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. That Burrow stuff, we might have to get to that right next? On 92.3 The Fan. Chris Antonetti, Guardians President of Baseball Operations. All baseball, no softballs, coming up with Chris Antonetti tomorrow. But very excited for that. Very excited to talk about the Jimenez trade. It's your opportunity to open up. All right, where's that Jimenez money going? Just saying. 3:30 tomorrow, oh, Chris Antonetti.
I'm going to put that on my plate, okay.
I believe you were the one.
I think it was on me already as is, but I do like how you're like, all right,
yeah,
we're no softballs around here. You ask the really tough question. Yeah. You go ahead and
I'll
do that.
I'll come up with different tough questions
all right,
to ask.
Can you match the toughness of what that is? Hey, Antonetti, thanks for coming on. Where exactly is the money going?
I mean, I can't stop myself from doing it. Like, I know what Albert's going to say half the time. When it pertains to his thought process on the Browns, I still do it. Can't stop myself.
Yeah, but Albert's not the man in charge of a team in the city.
Is that a big deal?
It's a little bit of a deal.
It's a big deal to have him. I know that.
But yeah, it's a little bit of a deal.
I mean, I am the guy that kind of irritated Terry Francona once upon a time.
What'd you say to Tito?
I don't remember, but I asked him a question he didn't like. Oh, no. I remember exactly what I did.
Please tell.
When I was first back, I did my Tito to Tito.
Oh, that was just dumb.
Your
Tito.
So you pointed out that maybe one of my strongest character points, but the thing that might upset people the most about me, is my willingness to tell people what they don't know about themselves.
Yeah, people don't want to hear about themselves in that way. They don't want you to tell them their flaws and their strengths and everything in between.
And I did that with Tito.
Yeah, that's probably I get how that didn't land very well. It's like the I think the worst encounter I had was I did an interview with JB Bickerstaff a couple years ago, and I don't remember what I asked him, but like we left the interview and I got a lot of people being like, "Oh, he got big mad at you, didn't he?" And I was like, "I know, I felt it in the moment, but we were able to climb out of it."
Still no one and I mean,
you know what it was? I asked him about the lights being too bright.
Oh.
I said, what happens with the fact that everyone thinks the lights are too bright? And there was the season after Jared Allen famously said the lights were too bright, and he was none too happy about
that. How dare you ask that question that his locker room put out there?
That was my thought process on it. I was like, this shouldn't have gotten you this mad. The fact that it did get you that mad is probably problematic.
Still, nothing will ever top how mad Hugh Jackson was when he got fired in Cleveland, came on my show in Charlotte. And then he made headlines because he was like, I think the job I did in Cleveland was some of the best coaching I've ever done. And then, of course, it came back up here. They were playing it. Mm-hmm. I think Ken and Anthony had me on the morning show. And basically, I was like, if he really believes that, he's delusional.
Which tracks all of Hugh Jackson, by the way.
All Hugh heard was Nick Wilson thinks Hugh is delusional. And there were some stern words behind the scenes.
Yeah, Hugh would do that. Hugh would definitely call people up and tell them if he didn't like how things went.
It was always funny because...
He was very about that.
I didn't have a problem with, but he was like, you know, I got people in Cleveland, right? And I was like, what are we inferring here?
He was very about that.
I was like, you know, I have more people in Cleveland, right? if we're going to get into some sort of land war here, your Hugh Jackson supporters will end up in Lake Erie with you.
So I'll be listening tomorrow, 3:30. We're going to find out who plays second base this year.
Also, man, it'd be really funny if Joe Burrow asked out of Cincinnati. No, if they cheap their way out of Joe Burrow, a once in a generation, Boomer Esiason was a great quarterback. He does not hold a candle to how great Joe Burrow is.
Nick, I don't think it's an accident what's happening on the sidelines.
Oh my God, I need it. It'd make me feel so much better about it as being a Browns fan if they blew if they blew the situation with the best quarterback in franchise history.
He knows. He knows he's on. He knows the cameras are watching every move he does during these games, and he is intentionally losing it on the sidelines in ways he's never lost it before.
I know he's never coming to Cleveland. They'll never trade him. He can never force his way here.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. Just force your way out of Cincinnati.
Or just out of the AFC would be really, really nice.
And honestly,
what a gift that would be. He would dominate the NFC.
It might be the thing that loses Cincinnati the Bengals. Like, I don't, like, no, seriously, like, you can't recover from losing Joe Burrow. It might not happen for 20 years, but that's how, like, dire of a situation it is.
It would be, is it of the equivalence of LeBron leaving Cleveland?
I think it's worse, because you've had other great sports figures. Like, this is, man, I mean, this is a guy forcing his way out. It's not even free agency. It would be the biggest, it would be right up there.
I mean, you see the parallels. They are there.
I mean, same guy. I've always said LeBron, Joe Burrow. When we come
You've
back,
seen the photo of him as a child wearing the LeBron uniform.
Albert on the State of the Browns next on 92.3 The Fan.